Well, Wednesday mornings at this time, we talk about local food. And this morning, we're checking in once again with our farmer's market whisperer and advocate, Jesse Davis. Jesse, good morning.
Hey, good morning. It is really beautiful here on the farm. I'll say that.
Yeah, and is this kind of cool, dry weather good for growing rhubarb?
You know, it actually is. Rhubarb, you want to have it where it has a good, cool, dormant period. And Lord knows, we have a very dormant winter here in Minnesota. But you don't want to see real high temps, real baking temps. Now, of course, rhubarb wants full sun. And it's a heavy feeder, too. You know, a lot of people wouldn't expect that because it's like, oh, yeah, that's grandma's rhubarb patch. It's been growing there for 100 years. But it is actually a pretty heavy feeder. So especially if you're going to be, you know, breaking apart in the spring, you know, the early spring or fall, an established rhubarb patch to give some plants to friends or establish a new patch, you may want to get some composted manure, or you know, worm castings or you know, some kind of good rich amendment to the soil where you plant it.
Uh-huh. So should I add worm castings to an area? I think it's an old rhubarb plant. Should I be fertilizing that?
Do you need all the rhubarb you already have?
I think I need a little bit more. It's only one plant.
Okay. So do you know how established that plant is?
I don't know. I moved into my house 3 years ago, and it was pretty much the only thing growing in the back.
Well, I definitely think it would be good to add some worm castings to that, and then maybe cover it with a little bit of straw mulch.
Oh,
and that way the nutrition won't, or the nutrients won't go just straight down and hit the roots, but kind of just help build up that soil a little bit.
Excellent.
But yeah, you may, you know, if it seems like a good spot for the rhubarb, if it's getting some sun, you know, people are more than happy to volunteer rhubarb plants in the fall. So you might want to expand that little patch. Maybe you've got a good little rhubarb honey hole going there.
All right. Thanks for the advice.
And so you can dig the plants in the fall, it sounds like.
Yes. You know, after typically July 4th is the last time you really want to harvest the plants. They get woodier, and you also just want to make sure that they are able to go through their growth cycle. And certainly if you are getting a few little flowers now at this time, which is towards the end of rhubarb season, you want to pluck those off.
We're talking with Jesse Davis, and we're talking about rhubarb today. What do you know about the history and uses of rhubarb, Jesse?
Well, you know, it's funny here. I'm headed to Deer River. We're going to get a green manure or a cover crop planted for their community garden next year, and we're going to be planting buckwheat. Buckwheat's a great cover crop, and you know, it leafs out so it can shade out other plants. It grows in kind of relatively poor soils, and rhubarb is actually part of the buckwheat family. And for those of you who are plant nerds, there's probably a couple listening out there. Sorrel is also part of this family. And sorrel, if you've ever had that, it's a real lemony, leafy green. It's wonderful in soups or adds a real nice, bright flavor to salads. But rhubarb is indigenous to China, and more than anything there, it was used as a medicine. There's all sorts of stories of miraculous healings that were caused in the Qing and Ming dynasties of these emperors who, you know, ate rhubarb. There's one where some emperor, you know, they kind of beat around the bush, but it's something about he fell sick after cavorting with four beautiful ladies and then was miraculously cured by eating rhubarb.
Oh my!
So, it has been prescribed as you know, kind of a one of many cures, and it made its way west originally through the Silk Road. So you'll see a lot of recipes in the Middle East, Central Asia, that have rhubarb. It'll be in a rice pilaf, or it'll be a sauce on kebabs, or grilled lamb, or grilled goat, I should say. And then as you know, trade picked up in a maritime way, it would make its way to England. In fact, it even factored into the Boxer Rebellion and the kind of the opium wars that the British were waging on the Chinese in the 1800s. You know, there's a great quote. There's a Spanish ambassador to, and I'm going to murder this name because I can't pronounce it, but it's an ancient Silk Road city called Samarkand. Okay. Some are keen to, I don't know, but it's an ancient, you know, beautiful palace. It still exists today in modern day Uzbekistan. But, you know, this Spanish ambassador was there at the court, and, you know, he said, of the finest of things imported from China were the silks and rubies and rhubarb. So, I mean, it definitely was a top dollar sort of herb and additive and flavoring. But it wasn't until the kind of availability of cheap, accessible sugar that it took off as a real cooking sort of ingredient. And that would have been in probably the late 1700s, especially as the sugar beet industry in Europe developed. You know, before, all that sugar had to come from the New World, from the Caribbean, from these slave plantations, and each country was the British were blocking the French were blocking the British. Sugar was a really expensive commodity up until about 1800, when they devised the sugar beet. In fact, Napoleon, because of a long-standing blockade, invested very heavily in the sugar beet industry in France, which is the international leader, and also the, I think it was what do they call it? It's not the Tsar when you're in Prussia. Kaiser Wilhelm, one of the Kaisers, he was very instrumental in getting the German sugar beet industry going, because the Germans had very few colonies, if any, in the Caribbean. So once that sugar started going, then you start seeing it in a lot of Scandinavian recipes, in baked goods and pies, you know, mixed with strawberries and things that we really associate rhubarb, or what some of us still call pie plant.
So rhubarb is the star of the Grand Rapids Farmers Market today and Saturday. Tell us what's going on.
Well, you know, this was a great idea put forward by Patty and Arnold Schmidt, and they're longtime vendors there. They also work with the Barbell Bee Ranch there, so you'll find Barbell Bee honey there. And Arnie has typically just some monster rhubarb. So last year we had a largest rhubarb leaf contest. It was for a $20 gift certificate for the largest leaf you could bring in. And then if you could beat Arnold's leaf, you'd get another $20 gift certificate. So we decided just to take it a little bit farther and just celebrate all things rhubarb. So, of course, we've got wonderful baked goods, crumbles, crisps. The Log Cabin wood-fired pizza is doing a rhubarb dessert pizza. But we've also got a rhubarb iced tea. Homestead Ponds, they do a highbush cranberry, and then last year they did a crab apple iced tea. It's done with organic turbinado sugar, organic green tea. But they're, you know, I thought, shoot, those are nice tart ingredients. Let's give rhubarb a try. And I called Scott up, and he said, you know, Jesse, I've been thinking about doing that for a long time. So they'll be sampling that today. And then the Homestead Ponds also sells concentrate of that tea. So it's frozen. You can take that home and make it at your leisure. There is going to be a rhubarb brat from Tyke. He's doing a rhubarb, and I haven't heard if it's a rhubarb jalapeno or if it's like a rhubarb in Swiss, but I know he did some kind of a rhubarb brat experiment last year, and he said he sold out really quick.
They do a lot of experimenting with those recipes.
Yeah, and certainly our jam and jelly makers do a lot of rhubarb experiments. I mean, you've got your rhubarb jam and your strawberry rhubarb jam. I know that Christy Neary and her mom, Lou Ann, have got a cherry rhubarb jalapeno jelly. I know that there's some raspberry jalapeno jellies that Boondocks has going. And then Boondocks also has a really interesting throwback option this year. It's a shrub. Now, shrubs are something that I've probably not heard of it until just a few years ago, but they were very popular in colonial times, and they're a fruit-based vinegar drink. It's a drinking vinegar with kind of fruit infusion, and actually on a hot day, very quenching. As many people know, there are a lot of health benefits to organic cider vinegar, which this is made with, and so this is something in a real trendy farmer's market down in the Twin Cities or out in Portland or D.C., you'd see quite a bit of this. But up here, it's still very new. You know, it makes a wonderful addition for a non-alcoholic drink, or, you know, with a little soda water and fresh lemon and gin. The rhubarb and basil shrub is just a really tasty and unique kind of a cocktail option.
Well, and that is a shrub that is a drink, not a plant.
That is correct. It is not a shrubbery. It is a shrub. But, yeah, so we've got rhubarb bars, and then, of course, lots of fresh rhubarb. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, we're getting towards the end of the rhubarb season. So, you know, even if you don't need it now, it's a great time to stock up. Rhubarb freezes really well, and it keeps that good flavor. It keeps the texture. So if you want to be able to cook a fresh local rhubarb crumble for Thanksgiving, this would be the time to stock up.
Can you clue me in how big a leaf might have to be competitive in the rhubarb competition?
Well, you know, a lot of the pictures have kids, so it makes them look even larger from last year's competition. But easily, we'd want to look at something that might be 18 inches, 22 inches across, maybe 18 inches tall. I mean, you really do see some monsters out there. It's pretty fun.
Okay. I remember, you know, our kids picking rhubarb leaves and, like, putting them on their heads as hats and all kinds of things because, you know, the rhubarb is very versatile. You can wear it as well.
I know my mother-in-law, she likes to do those concrete castings where you kind of make, like, almost looks like a bird bath.
I've done that.
Yep, and she's used rhubarb leaves as well.
I need to find out how that's done because I've been hearing about it and thinking to myself, a rhubarb leaf is really floppy compared to concrete, so it's going to take some setting up to do that well.
But and I am no crafter, I am no artist, so I can't give you any tips on that.
Okay.
A lot of times, jams and jellies and preserves are overlooked as glazes. And so if you've got a ham or a pork roast or some kind of, you know, slow-cooked thing you're going to do in the oven, like a turkey breast or roast chicken, these jellies, especially with a little kick from the jalapeno or the horseradish, are really wonderful. And that sugar, you know, making that glaze keeps all the moisture in. So that's definitely another kind of rhubarb idea of how you can kind of take rhubarb outside the box.
Thank you so much for talking with us today, telling us about rhubarb and telling us what's happening at the farmer's market.
Oh, you bet. So, this Wednesday and Saturday, we've got different vendors on Wednesdays and Saturdays. So if you've got the ability, you know, come check out all the different things both today and Saturday, and we'll be open till 1.
Okay. Thanks
all
a
right.
lot.
Hey, thank you. Happy rhubarb.